Have you ever felt, an unseen hand guiding you? Or maybe wondered if there are forces beyond what we see, sort of actively shaping things? Today, we're doing a deep dive into a concept that, well, that sources suggest is far more active and present than you might think. We're exploring what the texts call the ministration of holy angels. Basically, the surprising ways these beings interact with our world, with our lives. And for this deep dive, we have some really fascinating excerpts from spiritual writings. They shed quite a bit of light on the roles of, well, both holy angels and even evil spirits, our mission today. To really unpack these texts, we want to uncover the specific ways angels are described as operating and understand what that might mean for you, for us, in daily life. Hopefully it gives you a fresh perspective on these unseen dynamics. Okay, let's get into it. Let's jump right in with some really incredible, quite personal accounts from these sources. The author talks about how Satan, apparently through different agencies, you can only guess what those might be, actively tried to destroy their usefulness, to get them down from the work of God, as the text puts it. This isn't just, general bad vibes. It's described as direct strategic targeting.
It really is. And what's fascinating is how specific it gets. The sources mention Satan, frequently placing evil angels in our path to cause accident, which would result in our losing our lives. That's not just bad luck, is it? It's presented as deliberate, intelligent, malicious interference, engineering danger. And the author says it point blank, several accidents have placed my husband and myself in great peril, and our preservation has been wonderful. It really paints this picture of a spiritual battlefield with literal life or death stakes.
Wow. So a very real, tangible, unseen conflict being described here. How does that maybe reframe things for someone listening? Those close calls or challenges they've faced. The source connects this intense targeting and the protection that followed directly to the author's interest in and connection with the work of God.
Right. And that's a really crucial point for this deep dive. It implies this direct link, doesn't it? Between
yeah.
how committed you are spiritually and the level of unseen opposition you might face. And just as importantly, the level of divine protection. It's not just general spiritual warfare noise. It's specific targeting. The sources almost suggest that a deeper connection, a deeper involvement, might actually ramp up the intensity of that opposition.
So faith isn't necessarily a shield from trouble.
Exactly. More like a magnet, maybe, for both attack and this incredible defense. The text says, holy angels were sent upon the ground to deliver. That sounds very literal, like moment-by-moment physical help.
That does reshape how you think about commitment, doesn't it? Being deeply involved might mean more peril, but also maybe more direct intervention. The author says seeing this care brought confidence and trust and even acted as a reproof for lack of faith.
Mm-hmm. I guess you wonder, right? If having a deeper trust in this unseen protection could shift how we look at everyday dangers. Absolutely. And connecting it to the bigger picture, it suggests this constant, really profound care from God for those who love and fear him. It's not passive observation. It's active, zealous engagement. It really asks you to consider if maybe some of your own experiences feeling protected, those moments of just sheer good fortune could be, well, part of this unseen ministration.
Okay, so from that intense personal level, the sources then kind of zoom out. They widen the view to a collective promise, specifically for a future time of crisis. And this is where it gets really interesting, I think, for the bigger picture. The claim is that in the time of trouble, just previous to the coming of Christ, the lives of the righteous will be preserved through the ministration of holy angels. So not just individual stories, but a collective guarantee for a specific future time.
Yes, but there's a really important but there, a condition attached. It raises questions about personal responsibility. The text states, those who come up to that trying time neglecting to obey God's commands will have no security of their lives. It goes on, angels cannot protect them while they are living in neglect of any known duty or express command of Jehovah. And just for clarity, Jehovah in these texts is a specific name used for God.
So, okay, that angelic protection isn't automatic, it's conditional. Tied to obedience to following known duties, it's not a free pass then.
Yeah.
Does the text give any more detail on what that obedience looks like? Is it perfection? And what if someone considered righteous does slip up? Is the protection just gone?
That's a great question, a critical nuance. The texts don't really list every specific sin, but the emphasis seems to be on neglect of any known duty.
Hmm.
That suggests more of a conscious, persistent turning away rather than just an accidental mistake.
Okay. More about the overall direction, the intention.
Exactly. It's just commitment, intention. Protection isn't just given. It's framed as a partnership. It really highlights our part in this whole thing. It's not passive. Our choices have serious weight in this spiritual reality described.
Right. Okay, so an active, maybe even aggressive, unseen conflict, direct divine help, but human responsibility is key throughout. But it's not just about protection, is it? These sources also show angels in a, well, a fundamentally different role as the actual bridge between heaven and earth. They describe angels ever moving up and down from earth to heaven and from heaven to earth, like a busy spiritual highway constantly humming with activity.
That highway analogy is perfect. And it's not just random traffic, you see. It's purposeful, vital movement. The text makes this incredible claim. All the miracles of Christ performed for the afflicted and suffering were by the power of God through the ministration of angels.
Wow. So not just Christ acting alone.
According to this, no. Many think of angels as, you know, guardians or maybe messengers, but these texts really elevate their role. They're shown as the active conduits, almost like the spiritual plumbing, if you will, through which all divine blessings, including Christ's miracles, were delivered.
That's huge.
It is. It suggests a much more intimate, constant angelic involvement than people might usually assume.
A truly profound statement. Angels being indispensable for God's actions on earth. And the sources connect this back to Christ's role, saying he condescended to take humanity, uniting his interests with ours, while his divinity grasps the throne of God.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this unique union, the text says, that opens the communication of man with God and God with man. So Christ is the ultimate bridge builder, enabling this angelic work.
Precisely. And then the text gets specific about this communication. It quotes Christ saying, "The heavens were open for believers, and angels united with me in the reconciliation. They ascend, bearing the prayers of the needy and distressed. And then they descend, bringing blessings of hope, courage, health, and life for the children of men."
A two-way street.
Absolutely. Constantly active. Prayers go up, blessings come down, an unbroken circuit of care mediated by angels.
And that word reconciliation seems really important there, doesn't it? It implies a restored relationship makes this constant flow possible.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just about prayers being heard, but tangible, life-changing blessings being delivered via these angels.
Exactly right. And if you zoom out again, connected to the big picture, the sources just state it flatly. All the blessings from God to man are through the ministration of holy angels. That really positions them not just as messengers, but as the active deliverers. Indispensable to the flow of divine goodness, it gives such a tangible, dynamic role to these unseen beings in, well, in our daily experience of receiving any good thing. It makes you think about the hidden mechanics behind it all.
Okay, so they're unseen protectors, vital conduits for blessings.
Mm-hmm.
But then the sources shift again and throw down a challenge. Where do we fit in? It's not just about angels doing things for us. There's a strong case made for human partnership in this whole grand design. While the text affirms belief in the ministration of holy angels, it clearly expects us to get involved. It's not a spectator sport.
Which raises the big question, right? What is our part in all this? The text challenges those who claim to be children of God to act as though they were wide awake to the situation. It talks about a battle between righteousness and sin and says the object of Satan in this warfare is to dethrone Christ.
Dethrone Christ.
Well, probably not meaning a literal coup in heaven, but more like undermining his authority, his influence, the impact of his teachings on people's lives and choices. And our participation is presented as crucial. It implies the outcome isn't just up to the angels. Our active engagement matters.
That's a pretty heavy call to action.
Yeah.
The sources point out a perceived lack of Christian zeal.
Hmm.
Some people apparently were fearing the expense and calculating that they would lose time, maybe skipping meetings or spiritual work because it costs too much time or money. But the call is urgent. Be a co-worker with Christ to the heavenly angels in the great plan of salvation. It really frames our efforts as vital collaboration. But, you know, for people listening today, life is busy, time and money are scarce.
Do these texts offer any practical advice beyond just try harder?
That's a very fair point. The text doesn't give like a five-step plan, but it does offer a powerful why and clarifies how we should work. Sowing the seeds of truth with care, anxiety, and self-denial. Following Christ's example of continual sacrifice for others' good.
Self-denial. Anxiety, even. Yes. The implied guidance seems to be that the commitment needs to run deep enough to push past those practical worries about expense or losing time. It's trying to shift the focus from calculating earthly costs to valuing the eternal work. And the promise attached is huge. The grace of God may convict the heart, and the seed sown be awakened to life, and bear fruit to the glory of God. So it's a motivation for consistent, selfless effort, reminding us that while God brings the growth, our sowing is essential.
So our efforts, even if they feel small, are woven into this cosmic plan. And the reward isn't just for the person helped.
Yeah.
This phrase, From every soul saved, there comes to God a revenue of glory to be reflected upon the one saved and also upon the one instrumental in his salvation. Revenue of glory, that's incredibly striking language, isn't it? Like a divine economy.
It really is. This idea that spiritual work isn't just about individual results, it contributes to this divine economy of glory. Both the recipient and the coworker share in this. Absolutely. It elevates our human work, making it part of a shared divine accomplishment, a reciprocal glory enriching heaven itself.
Okay, before we wrap things up, there's a common misconception the sources tackle directly. It says many people think angels are the spirits of the dead. It's a belief you hear quite a bit, right, in different cultures.
You do, but the sources here are very definitive about it. They state, but the scriptures not only teach the existence of angels, both good and evil, but present unquestionable proof that these are not the disembodied spirits of dead men.
So a really clear line drawn. Angels are presented as a completely distinct order of beings, separate from human spirits who've passed on.
Why is that distinction so important in this context?
Well, it defines angels as unique, powerful, intelligent beings created for specific divine tasks.
Yeah.
They have their own nature, their own mission. It prevents a kind of blurring that might water down their specific role and power, as described in this framework. Right, keeps the lines clear. And finally, there's a really powerful shift in perspective offered. The text advises against dwelling on the great power of Satan to overcome us. It even notes that often we give ourselves into his hands by talking of his power, right? That's quite a warning that focusing on negativity can inadvertently empower it.
It is. And connecting it to the bigger picture, it's really a call to reframe our whole internal narrative. The focus, the text urges, should be on the great power of God to bind up all our interests with his own. It's a direct instruction, spiritually and psychologically. Talk of the matchless power of Christ and speak of his glory.
So it's not about ignoring evil.
Not at all, but about correctly orienting our focus, pointing it towards the ultimate source of strength, recognizing where the real overwhelming power lies. That shift can profoundly change how you feel inside and how you act outwardly.
That definitely challenges us to redirect our mental energy. And it leads into this incredible vision of heavenly activity. All heaven is interested in our salvation. The angels of God, thousands upon thousands and 10,000 times 10,000, are commissioned to minister to those who shall be heirs of salvation. They guard us against evil and press back the powers of darkness that are seeking our destruction. That's an immense, active, zealous force described as being on our side. It gives you this sense of a vast, unseen army constantly working for our good, way beyond anything we could normally perceive. So wrapping this up, what does this all mean for you listening? Our deep dive into these particular sources has uncovered this picture of a universe just teeming with unseen activity, a constant ministration of holy angels, protecting, interceding, delivering blessings, but also calling us, you, to be active co-workers in this huge cosmic plan. It suggests a spiritual realm far more dynamic and engaged than maybe we often think.
And that leaves us with a pretty important question, doesn't it? If all heaven is astir, as the text says, with angels constantly passing and repassing, fulfilling their mission of love, well, how might really knowing that, being aware of this pervasive, zealous, unseen activity change how you perceive challenges, your sense of purpose, even just your everyday gratitude? It really asks you to consider the implications of having such a vast, loving, active support system working with such dedication for you.
And maybe one final thought to leave you with, something to mull over. The sources suggest that if, say, covetous ones could get a view of heaven and behold the holy angels engaged in working for the salvation of man, they'd realize that Earth's treasures would be eclipsed and would appear but dross. So what if genuinely grasping the sheer scale of this unseen effort, all this angelic work focused on your well-being and salvation, what if that truly transformed what you value most? Perhaps recognizing this constant profound ministration could fundamentally recalibrate your internal compass, shifting your focus from the fleeting things of Earth to the eternal significance of your choices, your partnerships. Definitely something transformative to ponder as you go about your own journey.
If you enjoyed this study and would like to learn more, please go to revelationwithdaniel.com and search for Angels Studies. You will find a growing list of this type of podcasts.